This is episode 4 of The Investors Podcast.
Broadcasting from Bel Air, Maryland, this is The Investors Podcast. They'll take complex things and make them seem insanely simple. They make your boring drive to work feel exhilarating. They give you actionable investing strategies. Your host, Preston Pysh and Stig Broderson.
Hey, how's everybody doing? This is Preston Pysh, and I'm your host for The Investors Podcast. And today, I'm accompanied by my co-host, Stig Broderson, and we have a special guest, Hari Ramachandra. So, Hari, let's go ahead and just kick this thing off. Give us a quick introduction of who you are. And before we do that, Hari, I just want to open up and tell everybody how we know each other here. Last May, whenever I was at the Berkshire Hathaway shareholders meeting, I was in the airport getting ready to fly out of Omaha, and I bumped into this gentleman, Hari Ramachandra. And him and I were starting to chat. He was wearing a LinkedIn jacket, and I was asking him about his background. And he's an executive over at LinkedIn and was with the company at the start of whenever they first launched. And so Hari and I just kind of kicked it off and just started talking there in the airport. And it turns out that we had a lot of interest in common, and we've just kind of stayed in contact over email since that time. And so recently, Hari went to a shareholders meeting for a individual by the name of Monish Pabrai. And Monish is a follower of value investing, particularly the same type of investing that Warren Buffett does. And so Hari went out to his shareholders meeting. And what we're going to discuss in this episode is what Hari's experience was like whenever he was at that shareholders meeting. So Hari, go ahead and tell us about yourself, and we'll just start right there.
Thank you, Preston. Thank you for having me on the show. It's fun to be talking to you guys both today. As you said, we met in Berkshire Hathaway shareholders meeting. In fact, while we were just heading back home. To answer your question, as you mentioned, I've been in the software industry for past 15 years, and I work at LinkedIn. But the way I got introduced to stock market was early in my career. I got some stock options, and I had no idea what to do. And I saw everybody around me trading. Software engineers are not great investors, by the way. They're brilliant folks, but they're not usually great investors. And most of the time, we kid ourselves that some skills are portable. So we think that we are good at coding, so we are good at investing as well. So I just followed the herd around me. I started trading. I did charting. I did options. I did all things. And most of the time, I lost money. And fortunately, I didn't have much money to lose then. But even when I made money, I didn't know how I did, because it felt like random luck most of the time.
Yeah.
Around that time, when I was so frustrated about all the money I had lost, I got introduced to Warren Buffett by one of my friends.
Uh-huh.
I picked up a couple of his books, and I got hooked. I read more. I read books that he recommended, like The Intelligent Investor by Ben Graham. And that's how I got introduced to the world of value investing.
Yeah.
And
you made a point there initially about, software engineers, mathematical type people having trouble initially. And I can empathize with that, because I know whenever I first started out, and I think Stig can probably agree with this, is that whenever you first started out, you're very analytical and you're just going by the numbers. Once you kind of figure out how the math and all that kind of works with investing, you're by the numbers and you're not doing anything with like this quality type feel to it. And as you know, I know personally for myself, as I continue to learn more, you really have an appreciation for, you just can't plug numbers into some calculator and get the answer of, I need to buy this stock. There's a lot more to it, and there's a lot more quality with brands and goodwill and all that kind of stuff that I think a lot of people don't really, give credit due to that kind of stuff.
You made a very good point. In fact, the problem with most of us engineers is that we love precision, but many times we confuse precision with accuracy.
Yes.
So I think Buffett has famously said, or maybe it was John Maynard Keynes, that it's important to be in the right direction, even if you are like in a few meters off. But if you are going north instead of south, yeah, then all bets are off.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So that's a little bit of introduction. I think you guys can all see that Hari's a pretty hardcore value investor, has adopted a lot of the same things that Warren Buffett has adopted. So let's go ahead and talk about this Monish Pabrai. And Stig, I kind of stole your question there, but...
Don't think about it.
All right, let's go to the second question here, which is, Hari, who's Monish Pabrai?
So Monish Pabrai is a value investor and a businessman. In fact, he started out his career in information technology. He worked for Tel Labs in the early 80s before starting his own software consulting company called TransTech, which he later sold to an equity fund. So according to him, he started another venture after that, but where he lost most of his fortune. And that's when he discovered Warren Buffett. And he says he got hooked to value investing and he read all the books he could get hold of, which was either about Warren Buffett or value investing in the following years. And one less known fact about Monish Pabrai is that he in fact wrote a letter to Mr. Buffett offering to work for free without pay.
That sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah, and Buffett promptly responded, but politely declined. As Buffett says, you know, when he wants an opinion on his investing decisions, he looks at the mirror. He doesn't want any investing help.
It's funny. That's what Ben Graham did to Buffett. He turned him down on the initial offer. Is my understanding is that Buffett offered the work for free and Graham kind of turned him down. And then later on, he ended up working for him. But it's kind of ironic that the similar story.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe Pabrai was not as persistent as Buffett because he then went ahead and started his own fund.
Yeah, he was already a multimillionaire at that point. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's exactly. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. But tell us, Hari, how did you get interested in Pabrai's funds?
Sure. As I mentioned, Pabrai comes from the software industry. He's a first generation immigrant from India. So there were a lot of things in common enough to make me curious about him. So I started reading about him and then looked through his investments, his investment style, and listened to a lot of his talks. And also, I was very interested in one of his philanthropic projects. He calls it the Dakshina Foundation, where he and his organization educate underprivileged kids in India and help them get into the top schools in India and abroad. So a lot of these factors contributed to my curiosity about Monish and his philosophy of life and investing. And wow, that's how I started following him.
I love that. So in the show notes for this episode, we'll make sure that there's a link to that fund that you're referring to there, Hari. So that's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so I have a question. So I'm really big on books, and I'm really big on finding somebody that I really admire and then reading whatever book they have or finding a book that somebody else has written about them, just so I can kind of really understand that person's thought patterns and kind of how they got to where they are. So I know that Pabrai has a couple books out there. I have personally not read them, and I was curious if you had read any of his books.
Sure. There are two books out there which are, I guess, on Amazon. One is The Mosaic. The other one is Dhando Investing. Mosaic is out of print. I have not read it. However, I have read Dhando Investing, which is a fascinating book. The book talks about the philosophy of investing, mainly Pabrai's philosophy of investing. He also talks about how a little-known Indian community, they are called the Patels. They're probably less than 0.2% of the entire population of United States who have immigrated here, but they control 3/4 of all the motel business in U.S. So he talks about how they operate, and through that story, he introduces investing. So he connects business and investing very well together in that book. And one of the key takeaways for me in that book was my perception has always been, especially being in the Silicon Valley, that if you're an entrepreneur, you're risk savvy, you're a risk taker, you're like this Richard Branson who is ready to jump off a cliff, and like risk is in your blood. But Pop Roy says a true entrepreneur shies away from risk. In fact, he will do anything to reduce his risk, but he will embrace uncertainty. And in his own words, his tagline is, heads I win, tails I don't lose much. Yeah. So that was fascinating.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a data-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, homeowners earn on average 20% or more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa makes vacation home ownership easy. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home by doing less, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com. That's vacasa.com to get started on your dream of owning a vacation home. Have you ever wondered if there's an AI tool like ChatGPT specifically built for the stock market? A tool that not only aids you in your research and analysis process, but also allows for dynamic discussions? Today, I want to share such a tool with you called Meka. Meka is the AI-powered stock research assistant now enhanced with real-time stock data. Meka does a lot of the heavy lifting of sifting through financial statements and company data and delivers it to you nearly instantaneously, and the best part is that it's 100% free. Try it out today and ask Meka questions like, what is the financial health of Microsoft? How much cash does Copart hold on its balance sheet? What is the return on invested capital of Adobe, or millions of other prompts? Check it out today for free at Meka.com. That's Meyka.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover Sport leads by example with their dynamic design that rises to the occasion. It's got powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capabilities, coupled with signature Range Rover refinement. The third-generation Range Rover Sport is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet, redefining sporting luxury. It's got advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, offering next-level comfort and refinement. The purposeful cockpit-light driving position sets the tone for a focused interior that promotes exhilarating driver engagement. Award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. You can enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com.
All right, back to the show.
That's a wow. I love the quote. That's a good quote. Stig, you look like you had something you want to say.
Oh, yeah. So, Hari, I think that you probably thought about this as well, because I've been reading up on this Monish Paprai, and to be honest, I really wasn't that familiar with him before this interview. But it seems to me, when I read some of the things that he has written and some of the answers that he is giving to people at the annual meeting that he's holding, that he's very much into Warren Buffett, very much into Benjamin Graham. So I'm a bit confused why someone would invest with Paprai instead of investing with Warren Buffett.
That's a great question. In fact, one of the things that comes across when you listen to Paprai, he's a self-proclaimed cloner. He is an ardent fan of Warren Buffett, and he says that everywhere. In fact, he says that he has no original ideas, and he's proud of it. One of the reasons you might want to consider investing with Paprai is that his capital...
Because he's not 86?
Yes. That's a good one. He's not 86, but Buffett is still going strong. It's hard to beat Buffett even when he's 86.
I don't know if that's his right age. Is he really 86? I don't remember.
I thought he's 6 years younger than Munger. So Munger is 90 plus, so he must be 83 or 84.
Okay, he's old though.
Yeah.
So, as I said, you know, like I had read a book by Thomas Phillips. The book is 100 to 1 in stock market, where he describes the dangers of ego in business and investing. And he says, most miseries of investors are due to their unwillingness to accept ideas other than their own.
Wow.
And
there's something to write down. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. I, you know, for a leader or for an investor, it doesn't really matter who you are, or what you're doing. I mean, your ego will get in your way and it'll just crush everything. So, I mean, I can't agree with that anymore. It's awesome.
Perfect. Yeah, I highly recommend that the book 100 to 1 in stock market. I believe this was written in the 1960s, but it's a great read. And it talks about a lot of stocks that you could have bought in the 60s that would have made or kind of like, you know, if you had invested $10,000 in those companies, it would be a million in 15 years or 20 years.
Wow.
So coming back to Stig's question, one of the advantages Pabrai has over Buffett is the law of large numbers working against Berkshire Hathaway. I would think of Pabrai as Buffett in his early years when he was working on his Buffett partnership. So his style is very similar to how Buffett used to invest when he used to invest for his partnership rather than investing for Berkshire Hathaway.
And so a lot of people might not realize this, but Berkshire Hathaway has actually gotten so big, and Buffett, you know, he says this, that he's actually starting to become handicapped because he's moving so much capital that the smaller to mid cap type companies, whenever he puts money into those smaller organizations, he really doesn't get that much of a growth spurt over the whole size of his company because it's just such a small portion of his portfolio. So he's like forced to invest in these big, large cap businesses in order to get any type of, you know, 5% movement in his overall company. And so what, you know, Hari's kind of referring to here is with Pabrai, you're able to invest in the same philosophy in the same exact way, but you're doing it on a much smaller portfolio, which allows him to have larger movement on the fund itself. So that's one of the claims that Hari's got here with his response. Okay, so here, I've got another question for you. I read that to get into the fund, it required a significant amount of capital in order to initiate and to step into the fund. I even read as high as $2.5 million in order to step into it. I'm just kind of curious, is that true? You know, is it really require that much funds to just kind of step into it? And is there any other nuances that you'd want to highlight?
Yes, it is true. In fact, most of his funds are close to new investors today. One of the reasons why Pabrai tries to keep the hurdle high is that he wants to attract a specific type of investors to his funds. And his favorite target is a successful entrepreneur or a businessman who has made fortune in his own line of business. But he is not investing all his nest egg with Pabrai. Which means he has staying power, and also he would not panic in and out of this of his fund. So Pabrai wants to limit the churn rate and also attract the right kind of investor to his funds.
Yeah.
And in fact, interestingly, when I was in the annual meeting, I met a couple of investors who were his early investors in his funds, and it was as low as $200,000 to $250,000 when Pabrai started back in 1999. So over the period of time, I believe he has increased the hurdle rate.
Wow.
Limit.
I mean, I totally understand why he would do that. You know, I get asked a lot of the times by people, you know, why don't you start your own fund in this? And for me, I immediately reply back, well, I don't want to be handicapped by people taking the money out of the fund at the wrong time or giving me the money at the exact wrong time with the way that the market swings. And so when you have a person like Pabrai who's doing this, he's forcing people that are an educated shareholder or educated investor into his fund so that they don't give him money at the wrong time or pull money out whenever he needs it most so he can buy undervalued equities. That's kind of a really interesting approach that he was able to do this with a fund because he kept that threshold at such a high dollar amount. Would you agree with that, Hari?
Yes, I do. And he also has a restriction of 1 year. So that, like, you know, if you invest with him, you cannot pull your funds out for the entire year. But at the end of the year, if you have any family emergency or if you need the money, you can always pull it out.
Huh. That's really interesting. A lot of people might not realize this, but with Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett basically has the exact same model with his A shares, which encompass a majority of his entire portfolio as far as the value. So his, you know, when you look at his A shares, they're over $200,000 a share just to buy one share. If you're buying the Bs, you can get them for right now, I think they're almost $140 a share. But that makes up such a small portion of his overall portfolio, those B shares, that it doesn't really have any impact over the total valuation of the business. So it's really interesting to see that both of them had the same exact model.
Yeah. In fact, when somebody asked, how did you start your fund? Pabra answered that, like, you know, he looked around and he had already read about how Buffett had structured his partnership, and he saw that nobody was copying it for years. So he decided to just clone it exactly how Buffett had done it. So his fee structure is exactly what Buffett had for his partnership. That is, no management fee and 1/4 of the returns after 6% of annual returns. So that's very interesting. And he says, like, you know, he's surprised that nobody cloned Buffett's partnership for a very long period.
Oh, yeah. And that's also really something that surprises me, because Warren Buffett is very keen on teaching everybody about investing, and he's not holding anything back. So since Warren Buffett has been so keen on, you know, telling what he's been doing, why do you think that so few people as Pop Rai are actually doing the same thing as Warren Buffett, Hari?
That's a great question, Stig. In fact, I believe Charlie Munger answered it the best in one of the annual meetings when somebody asked why aren't people following this method. He said people would die before they follow this method. That's because it works against a lot of human nature. There is more psychology involved here than temper, than intelligence. As Buffett says, that if you got a lot of IQ, give it away to somebody else, because you need more temperament than intelligence in investing. To follow Buffett's methodology, you need to have patience. Also, you need to defy instant gratification. You should understand the business. Investing should be, the process should be appealing to you rather than the end result. And also, it's just the nature of investing business, I feel, that a lot of fund manager, even though they know what's the right way to invest, like following the Buffett's way, they're not able to because their investors are not patient with them. Many funds, like, you know, if they are not able to show results quarter over quarter or year over year, investors would pull their funds out of such funds. And hence, to survive, they have to follow the crowd, show the results. If they go down along with the market, nobody complains. But if they lag the market, then people will pull out their funds. So in investing world, I believe it works both ways.
Yeah, I have a point real fast. So a lot of people don't realize this, but Berkshire Hathaway, a lot of people think that Berkshire Hathaway is a fund. They don't think that it's an actual company, but it is a company. And one of the things that I think is really unique that Buffett's done is he's actually taken this, you know, people, the shareholders are giving you the money, or they're if you're in a fund, I should say, they're giving you the money at the wrong time. They're giving you all the money whenever the market's climbing. And then whenever the market crashes, they're wanting to take that money away from you, which totally handicaps that fund manager from being able to buy stocks and equities at a very cheap price whenever the market had crashed. And so what Buffett did is he literally took that model and flipped it on its head. OK, and because it's his own company, he actually has the opportunity to, whenever people want to sell his company at a very cheap price, he then, as a shareholder can, or as the manager of the company, can just buy back those shares at an extremely cheap price. And then if let's say the market was overvaluing Berkshire extremely high, he could actually issue more shares in order to collect you know, cash for that, for those shares. He does, he hasn't done that, but he could. And he's basically taken advantage of that market psychology so much so that that's how he modeled his company. And I, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Pabrai would somehow do that in the future if he felt like, and I think he's really kind of protected himself with the threshold that it costs to get into his fund. But I, you know, it's just really interesting how these gentlemen have basically protected themselves from the those types of investors and those types of people that would be investing in their fund or their company.
Yeah, Preston, in fact, you made an interesting point. Pabrai is actually cloning the Berkshire model as well. In fact, he announced Dando Holdings in his annual meeting this year.
There you go.
This Dando Holding will be a holding company. The first acquisition is a insurance company called...
Oh my gosh, he is cloning them. Yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but Berkshire's biggest engine is Geico, which is, you know, a huge insurance company. So that's amazing.
Yeah, so the first acquisition is actually an insurance company. It's called a Stone Trust Insurance, and they're into worker comp. So I can see that, you know... Monish is now going after the float, and also I think his plan is to acquire more subsidiaries wholly owned, but he said he will also not shy away from investing in public companies or creating a portfolio inside Dando Holdings. So he's essentially creating a new Berkshire.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Kyle, you're connected with a ton of different investors and portfolio managers, and you're just really in the know on a lot of these things. How do you keep up with all the day-to-day headlines for your portfolio companies?
Yeah, so I used to have a ton of issues with this, and that was until I started using Yahoo Finance.
Really? What's so great about it?
So Yahoo Finance is awesome. I have my whole portfolio entered, and I can easily see all the top headlines to keep up with the recent news. And each day you get an overview of the major global events that might be moving the market. So I'm ready to easily pounce on any opportunities that come my way.
What else can you do on Yahoo Finance's platform?
They also have a number of cool features, including a tool that lets you link all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings, and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts.
Well, now I know that the audience is really going to love this one. And I actually see they have 90 million monthly active users.
For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com.
The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. Today's show is sponsored by public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Ally, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account. As many of you know, I love studying businesses and networking with business owners. The more I've studied businesses, the more I've realized that starting and scaling your business is easier than ever because of companies like Shopify. Did you know that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S.? Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify even helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. Up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. What I personally love about Shopify is that it's the turnkey solution to kickstart and grow your business. And they are totally committed to giving you the necessary tools to succeed as a business owner. Plus, they have an award-winning customer support team there to help you every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/WSB. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/WSB now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/WSB.
All right, back to the show.
Wow. Hey, so when you were at the meeting, did you get to meet him? Did you get to interact with him at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. The meeting was in SoCo University near Irvine. One of the interesting things that I found was it was a casual atmosphere. There were fewer than 200 people there. Most of them were either his investors in his funds or bloggers or people like me who follow him. And since it was a small crowd, Monish walked around before the meeting started, shook hands, introduced himself, spoke to most of us. And even after the meeting, he had hosted a dinner for all the people attending the meeting. And during the dinner, we could all get one-on-one time with Monish for a couple of minutes. We talked about investing, his philosophy about life, current matters. So it was a very friendly atmosphere. In fact, I have heard about Berkshire Hathaway's annual meeting during the early 80s, where there were very few, probably a couple dozen people attending those meetings. I kind of felt maybe it is similar, and I feel like those people should be very privileged because they could have interacted with Buffett, asked him questions, and picked on his brain on a lot of topics. So yeah, it was fun, and yes, we could talk to Monish.
Okay, Harry, sounds like a great meeting and sounds something that I want to attend myself. What was the main takeaway that you got from this meeting with Mr. Paparai?
So one of the main discussion points in the meeting was Dhandha Holdings. And my main takeaway was that if, according to what Paparai says, if it goes according to the way he is planning, Dhandha Holding can be a great entry point for many investors. But I would also like to caution that we don't know how he will operate Dhandha Holdings, and we don't know whether he'll be able to replicate Buffett's performance with Berkshire. But nonetheless, I would be interested to look into his company. By the way, Dhandha Holdings is planning to go public in 2015.
I was just going to ask you that question. Okay, so he's going to take the thing public in 2015. He'll probably bring the initial offering price per share probably at like $100,000 price point, I'd imagine. Did he mention any of that? Like what price point he's bringing in at?
No, he didn't go into the details. He did mention about the plans to go public.
I love this. This is awesome.
Yeah, so it will be an interesting kind of, you know, structure for sure. Right now, it's structured as a special purpose investing vehicle, which means that he has certain time limit before the money is pulled back out of this holding if it is not invested. So he has few investors who have pulled in money for him. And he is looking into acquisitions. And one of his main acquisitions is the insurance company I just mentioned. If it goes through, then the holding will come into existence this year. And hopefully by next year, they'll take it public.
Well, so everyone out there, if you're worried about Buffett's age and you're worried about Berkshire Hathaway and where it's going over the next 30 years, you might have something interesting here with Paparai Funds and his new holding company that he's standing up. Stig, you have one more question.
Oh, yeah. So, Hari, this is one question that we like to ask our guests, because something that I have benefited tremendously from is just one single investment advice. But let's first hear from you. What is the best investment advice you ever received?
That's a very good question, Stig. And it's a hard one to answer because there are so many investment advice that you would have got, especially for me from Mr. Buffett and Mr. Charlie Munger. I have read so many of their books and also learned a lot. However, the one that made a big impact on my way of thinking was from Howard Marks, and it was from one of his memos on risk and returns to his investors. In that, he says, in life and investing, you can't expect above average returns by doing what everyone else is doing. To me, this is simple and profound, and many times, at least I had a hard time to really get this message. Buffett has been talking about it when he says, be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful. Essentially, they're talking about being a contrarian investor. However, most of us try to follow the herd. At least I have been following the herd. Whether it's value investing or trading, you find comfort in following the crowd. And the reason is that through evolutionary psychology, it has been understood that our ancestors were equipped with certain way of thinking, which kind of, you know, help them make quick decisions. And one of those is, if all the animals are running in one direction, there must be some danger, so run along with them. So it's very hard to sometimes overcome that, and it requires a lot of discipline.
I think the best way to overcome what you're talking about is knowledge. So I think a lot of people, when they're investing, they follow this group think and they follow this, you know, herd mentality, because at the heart of it and the essence of what's actually happening, they really truly don't understand what they have their money in and what it represents. And I think that the more that a person understands and immerses themselves in it, in what is a stock, what does it represent? What's behind on the balance sheet? What's on the income statement? What do those numbers mean? I think when a person starts educating themselves with that information and that knowledge, it is so much easier to think different than the crowd and to go in the opposite direction, because you truly inherently understand what the essence of what it is that you own.
Oh, yeah. So I definitely agree with you. Knowledge is really the key here. And I think that pretty much also wraps up the whole thing that Warren Buffett and Mr. Popper is talking about here. That's really that you really need to have knowledge to not do the same thing as the herd.
So, Hari, if anyone from our audience would want to get a hold of you or learn more about you or what you write, I know that you have a blog. Where could they find you at?
Yes, Preston. So I share my experiences and my learning in my blog, bitsbusiness.wordpress.com. It's BITS business. Anybody can interact with me there. I have a user request form as well, which they can ask questions, and I'll be glad to answer.
I know one of the things that I went to Hari's blog for is he sometimes does a recap of discussions from some of these shareholders meetings. So if you wanted to see like some of the notes from the Berkshire meeting, Hari posts that on there. He posts a bunch of really kind of quite interesting articles. So I highly recommend that. It's Bits Business in order to find Hari. And we'll have a link to that on the show notes. So if there's anything that you're interested in, whether it was a book we were talking about or any of these websites, we're going to all have that on the show notes for theinvestorspodcast.com. Just go to episode 4 and you can find all those show notes. So if you have any question for us, we want to hear your voice. Go to asktheinvestors.com. Right there, you can record your question. We'll play it on the show. And if for whatever reason your question does get played on the show, we'll send you a free signed copy of our book, The Warren Buffett Accounting Book. Be sure to tune in next week. We have an episode and an interview with a former trader from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. His name is Mr. Greg Pisani, and we're really looking forward to having him. So I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Investors Podcast. To listen to more shows or access to the tools discussed on the show, be sure to visit www.theinvestorspodcast.com. Submit your questions or request a guest appearance to The Investors Podcast by going to www.asktheinvestors.com. If your question is answered during the show, you will receive a free autographed copy of the Warren Buffett Accounting Book. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This material is copyrighted by the TIP Network and must have written approval before commercial application. We'll be right back.